From the Denker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Coming up on the program, a conversation with poet, essayist, and University of Utah professor Paisley Rechdahl and her new project to create a community-built atlas of Salt Lake City and its stories.
There's always an imaginative city that's attached to the real city, and you can either achieve that dream, or you can destroy it, or you can change it, but it's always there. We want people to think in all of these different ways. How does a poem or an essay or a story map a city, and how does a map actually tell a story about a city?
Also, reporter Kim Shusky and the Salt Lake expansion of the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary. All that and more just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. First, this world news from the BBC. Thanks for tuning in to The Rundown, a news and information show where we look at emerging stories, current events, politics, and ideas. Here on the program, you can hear conversations with local newsmakers, trailblazers, cultural entrepreneurs, and more. Today, we begin with the local headlines. And first up, news that Saratoga Springs Republican Mayor Mia Love collected more than $475,000 in campaign contributions during the past 3 months to fuel her rematch against Democratic U.S. Representative Jim Matheson. The fundraising numbers released by Love's campaign on Monday are the first reported since the 37-year-old officially announced her 2014 bid for Utah's 4th Congressional District on May 18th. The campaign says that 9,120 people and two political action committees donated from April through June of this year. Love narrowly lost to Matheson last November in what was one of the most expensive races in Utah history, with both candidates spending a combined $11.2 million. Had she won, Love would have become the first black female Republican elected to Congress. Matheson is a seven-term Democrat who represents one of the country's most heavily Republican districts. The Utah delegation is no longer pushing for the sale of a piece of national forest land for a ski lift between a pair of Wasatch Range ski resorts. The Salt Lake Tribune reports that the legislation didn't gain any headway in a previous session of Congress, and no one plans to reintroduce the legislation this year. The U.S. Forest Service has said it's opposed to selling a corridor of land for the gondola. Representative Jason Chaffetz says he prefers to let a larger study of transportation options in the Wasatch Mountains play out first. It's on his district that the Canyons Ski Resort wanted to build a lift over the Wasatch Crest to Solitude Mountain Resort. Tens of thousands of animals are killed every year in city and county shelters throughout Utah. The Best Friends Animal Society has been on the front lines to try and change that by developing unique programs and partnering with local governments. And on Saturday, they opened an urban adoption center as one step in a larger plan to eventually make Utah a no-kill state. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky has the story.
Sugar House has gone to the dogs and cats and other adoptable animals. A new adoption center opened on Saturday in the heart of the community. Chloe, Ben, Angie, and Michael Randall were invited guests at the ceremony. 12-year-old Chloe and her younger brother Ben started a foundation last year called Kids for Pets to help animals in need.
We run a nonprofit business and we sell toys and we donate all the proceeds to animal rescues.
Their nonprofit has raised over $2,000 so far. They were among 100 animal lovers and local officials that joined in to welcome the new center, which will be able to house about 20 adoptable dogs and 40 cats, according to Gregory Castle. He's the founder and the current CEO of Best Friends Animal Society, a nonprofit rescue group that started in southern Utah.
This is a new facility for adopting animals in this community. Most of the animals will come from the local shelters, and all of those shelters have a need for adopting more animals, and this is a great opportunity. It's very central. There's a lot of people around here who are interested in adoption, so it's a really good location.
Castle says this center is part of a larger plan to work with local communities in Utah with the ultimate goal of ending euthanasia of all adoptable animals. In 2012, they partnered with West Valley City and Taylorsville Animal Services to trap and neuter feral cats, increase mobile adoption services, and work with voluntary veterinarians to provide low-cost spay and neutering options for pet owners.
When the term euthanasia is used to describe the killing of healthy animals, it doesn't really mean that. You know, it's not a mercy. So we aim to bring this community to a stage where all those animals have homes.
Arlen Bradshaw is a member of the Salt Lake County Council, representing a district that includes the Sugar House area. He says the council has spent the last few years passing ordinances that protect animals and make it easier to adopt. These include controversial measures, such as anti-tethering rules, licensing of cats, increased fines for not licensing cats and dogs, breeding restrictions, and removing limits on how many domestic animals can be in a home.
Well, I think it reflects the value of our community that, you know, we value our four-legged friends and the joy that they bring to the lives of many people, and we don't want animals to suffer.
Bradshaw says one measure they are currently working on would bring animal services from other cities under the umbrella of the Salt Lake County Animal Services in order to better align the rules between cities and counties and make it easier to move animals between shelters, as well as partner with animal rescue groups like Best Friends.
You know, a stray dog doesn't know what side of a city boundary it's on, and its chances of survival should not depend upon which city it's picked up in.
Castle says he is pleased with the number of animals that have been saved so far, but much more needs to be done to save the healthy animals that are still euthanized.
As far as the progress in Utah is concerned, over the length of time that we've been working really consistently throughout the state, which is probably 12 years or so, the number of animals that are killed in the shelters has come down by more than half. So, you know, this is kind of the progress which has been made, and I am very confident that it will continue to be made.
He adds that there will always be animals that need to be euthanized because they are injured, in poor health, or too dangerous to be saved. But the goal is to minimize this number as much as possible. Around 6,000 animals were euthanized in the Salt Lake Valley in 2011. For KCBW, I'm Kim Shusky.
And I'm Roger McDonough. You're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Stay with us. And now on The Rundown, we turn to our discussion with Paisley Rekdal, an award-winning essayist, poet, professor at the University of Utah's English Department, and now mapmaker. Her poems and essays have appeared in the New York Times Magazine, American Poetry Review, New Republic, and the Virginia Quarterly Review, among many other places. She spoke with us today about her new web-based project called Mapping Salt Lake City. Paisley, what exactly is a community atlas?
Well, we're still trying to figure that out, to be honest. I had read Rebecca Solnit's amazing book, Infinite City, a while ago, and I thought that was a great project. The book, for those who haven't read it, is basically a collection of short essays with maps made by local artists in the San Francisco area. And they're all creating this portrait, I guess, a map portrait, a narrative map portrait of San Francisco. And I thought, well, with the history of San Francisco, that makes sense, but it also makes sense for the history of Salt Lake City, which is pretty rich as well. But I thought the one problem with the book was that it was a static produced object, that once you've made the book, it's done. And to a certain extent, it shuts down the ability for other people to add their voices, write more essays themselves, or contribute in some sort of way, map something out particular to the city that tells something about their lives. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, this should be a digital project. And so that's why we decided to do a website. We decided that it would allow people to write and produce things quickly and to send them into us, and we can upload that. And through it, we would have some sort of, it's hard to describe what we're trying to do in a way, but it's a multimedia approach to mapping. I mean, the thing about maps that I find really fascinating, and I've always been fascinated with maps ever since I was in high school, is that the more you know about maps and the more you think about maps, the more you realize that maps aren't just informational. They're narrative forms. You learn about what people see, what people privilege when you look at a map. You look at how people tell the stories of a community through a map. And I think that when we're talking about the kind of narrative atlas project of mapping Salt Lake City, we want people to think in all of these different ways.
Professor Rekdal, then, is this, would you consider this a literary endeavor?
You know, when I first started, I did, because I thought this would be a very small project attached to my nonfiction writing class. And I thought that most people would write an essay and then create a map to go along with that essay. But as people have started to respond to this project, people have turned in photo essays, people have turned in maps, Google Maps, in which little tiny fragments of their life are written as, you know, as attachments to the map. And it became obvious that it was not, if it was a literary form, it was exploding the conventions of the literary form. It's nonfiction, but it, you know, this nonfiction format seems to take in so many other kinds of media, from video to photography to oral projects, and then, of course, to the mapping technologies like ArcGIS and Google Earth and things like that.
I'm thinking about how this is, you know, this could be an ongoing history project. Yeah. I can imagine centuries down the line, genealogists looking at this and trying to find their, you know, their great grandfather who wrote that thing on mapping Salt Lake back in the day.
Yeah.
Is that part of your hope, is to make this contribute to the historical data?
I think it's a great question. And it's sort of a hydra-headed question. Mm-hmm. I should start by saying that actually I was trained as a medievalist. That's my background. Intellectual background, I guess. And when you study medieval studies, you learn very quickly that you're stuck with a very expurgated record. You don't know what people really thought, and you don't know what people really hoped for. You don't know the average person's life experience. You can only see it fragmented through church histories and whatever few records were kept on estates and through art and through literature. But you don't hear what people want to say. And one of the things about this project that really excites me and also kind of frankly really exhausts me is that it could go on forever. I mean, it could go on as long as the community wants it to go on. And it is as open and it can be as fluid as the community wants it to be. Frankly, if no one uses this site and no one writes for it, there's not going to be much there. And that also tells us something, which is that this is not the kind of format that most people want to tell their stories in, possibly.
Here's a question for you. What kinds of submissions are you getting? You know, I'm curious about the sorts of things that you get and what the sort of range is that you're getting in. And at some point, is this going to be kind of a wiki where anybody contributes and does whatever they want at any time?
Yeah, we're having debates about that. I'll talk about that second question in a minute. In terms of the submissions, so far what we're seeing is really quite the hodgepodge, which I'm delighted by. We've got a couple of people who've turned in some photo essays. One woman turned in a project that she'd been working on for a long time, where she had followed her father's career as a photographer in Salt Lake her grandfather about 100 years ago. He used to be a photographer in Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. And she found his collection of photographs, and she decided to photograph everything he photographed from the same angle.
Wow.
To sort of show the changes and put them side by side. And it's fabulous. You know, we're going to link to that, obviously. We have gotten submissions from people doing photo essays about the Granary District, which is wonderful. And we'd love to hear more from the West Side, actually. In general, we're trying to, you know, make sure this doesn't just become about the downtown or, you know, the avenues.
Right.
We've also got people writing about the architecture of certain buildings. One person turned in an amazing short essay that is highly critical in a very smart way about the Natural History Museum, which is a beautiful building. I think we all love it. But the new Natural History Museum and critiquing what that architectural form really says and about our way of thinking about space and environment. So it really is all over the map, from the very personal to something more academic to something found. And we're really quite excited about it. As for the wiki approach, we've had debates about this. The inner medieval historian in me would love the wiki approach, which is anyone can upload anything at any time. Others have, of course, suggested that, and rightly so, that depending on how people want to use this site, there's always a troll out there. There's always someone who wants to, you know, make something terrible out of something good. And so we'd like to control against that if possible. But we're also a little bit nervous about accuracy in the historical record, too. We don't want, you know, obviously Wikipedia allows for people to question people's accuracy and to change things. And that creates a lot of work for everybody, but I think it's going to be necessary work. So I think we will be, for a period of time, asking people to send their submissions in to me directly or via the website. It has other emails attached to the website, and we'll review it and make sure that there's nothing sort of shriekingly wrong with it, and then upload it. And it also gives us an ability to use that the information as it comes in to attract more readers and users of the site to the site.
So here's a question for you. Where do you see this going? I know there's, you know, QR codes and iPhone applications and so on, but anything else?
Well, you know, I have to say, I'm a little embarrassed. I mean, we are so ambitious with the QR codes and the iPhone app, and we are the site costs to design it are running much higher than we had anticipated. So all of those dreams are going to be, that's our five-year plan. At first, it was our first-year plan. Now I think it's going to have to be put into our five-year plan because we're burning through all of our grants just trying to get this site up. It takes a lot of work. I didn't realize that. For some reason, I thought the internet, oh, it's free. It is not free. And so the QR codes, yeah, that'll be coming up, I think, in the next year. And the year after that, we're going to try and develop a map application an iPhone application. My dream is that maybe we get a great grant that allows us to put on a kind of mapping technology. We've been looking on the web for mapping technologies that allow people to create maps instantly on the website that are a little more high tech, a little more aesthetically pleasing than the average Google map, and you know, have that as a warehouse of you know, people's handmade maps or people's imaginative maps of Salt Lake City or personal maps. That's the long term plan.
And, you know, I just imagine that you've been looking at a lot of maps yourself lately. Anything stick out especially from your research?
Actually, the thing that really struck me the most about the city in terms of mapping is a kind of map that I think is the utopian map that Joseph Smith had of the ideal city, what the ideal city we would have gotten had Brigham Young actually put that fully in place. I think that sticks in my mind. I don't know if listeners know about this. This is something that we had many guest speakers come to the class to talk about the history of Salt Lake. And many of them talked about this sort of utopian layout of the city, what the map would have looked like. And originally, they would have been basically clusters of square mile cities done up in blocks surrounded by farmland. And then each one would be like its own ward or its own pod connected to others. As the city would expand, another pod would go up. But it would always be surrounded by farmland so that people could go out to their fields and work their fields and grow their vegetables and fruits and then come back home. And what's fascinating about it is, of course, when people got their land, the first thing they did, their farmland and their homeland, the first thing they did was start selling it to other people. So the utopian vision broke down almost immediately. But in my mind, I think that the map that keeps coming back to me is what the city could have looked like. And I think that's the thing we're always aware of, right? What the city could have looked like or could look like if we're not more involved with it. What the city could have looked like if we had done something different. And I guess I kind of hope with this website, people start thinking about that as well, that there's always an imaginative city that's attached to the real city. And you can either achieve that dream or you can destroy it or you can change it. But it's always there.
Finally, when is the big unveil of this project? I know that it's coming up sometime later this year.
We're going for September. We've got a 4-8-12 week reveal. In 4 weeks, we'll have more of what the site, in terms of its design and architecture, is going to look like, and it'll be on the web. In 8 weeks, we'll have more of the project's apps. In 12 weeks, we're hoping to have a massive party as we unveil, you know, what we have up to date at that point. So about 12 weeks from today, I think, is a good estimate.
Great. And finally, how can people get involved if they want to, you know, submit their story about their point in time and space here in Salt Lake City, that they've got something to say? How do they do it?
There's a number of ways. The easiest way is to contact me directly at paisley.rechdahl@utah.edu. You can find me on the English department homepage. I'm one of the faculty members. You can easily contact me there. You can also contact me via our website, www.mappingslc.org. Again, www.mappingslc.org. We also have a Facebook page for us, Mapping Salt Lake City. And you can follow us on Twitter, which I'm learning right now and I'm not doing such a great job at. But we have Mapping Salt Lake City at Mapping Salt Lake City.
Great.
That's our Twitter account. And any of these ways you can get a hold of us and have a conversation with me or one of our members working on this. And we urge people to get involved. We would love to have as many submissions as possible.
Well, it sounds like a novel and interesting project, and we look forward to seeing it unveiled.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
That was Paisley Rechdahl, a professor at the University of Utah's English department and the creator of the upcoming web-based Mapping Salt Lake City project. This and an archive of previous discussions heard on The Rundown can be found at our website, kcpw.org. The Rundown was produced today by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for joining us today for The Rundown from KCPW. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next. Stay with us.